You guys can have a seat. Third grade and under, they're going to head downstairs to the toddler room. And so this past week was our 22-year adoption anniversary. From when we traveled to China, spent 2 weeks there, and came back home with our amazing and wonderful daughter, Kaylee. And one of the great joys that God gives us is having kids. And one of the great joys beyond that is when our kids own their faith, when they become followers of Christ and their walk with Christ becomes their own. Not just they're following Christ because their parents did, but it means something to them and it transforms their lives and they follow with all of their hearts. And we are just so thankful for the work that God is doing in Kaylee's life and in her heart. And this morning she's going to come and share with you some things that God has been teaching her over the past year. So Kaylee, come on up. Love you, kiddo.
So good morning, everyone. So I'm going to open with a prayer. Dear God, I just thank you for today and the beautiful weather and those that could be with us here today. I pray that, Holy Spirit, you just come down on this place and just fill us in this place. And I pray against anxiety and fear, and I pray for everyone for joy and peace. Amen. So, good morning. So today we're going to be talking about the story of Ruth, and we're going to be talking about it from Naomi's perspective. Now, Naomi was Ruth's mother-in-law. So we're going to start off with Ruth 1, 3 through 5. So, Naomi's husband passed away, and Naomi was left with her two sons who married Moabite women. One married a woman named Orpah, and the other a woman named Ruth. But about 10 years later, they both died. This left Naomi alone without her two sons or her husband. She was left with her two daughter-in-laws. So basically, to explain, Naomi was married, she had two boys, her husband passed away, and then her two sons died. So they were left, the mother and the two daughter-in-laws. So then she goes on to say, "Don't call me Naomi. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made life very bitter for me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has caused me to suffer, and the Almighty has sent such tragedy upon me." So hopefully none of you have experienced pain and grief quite like this. So to catch you up, basically, Naomi talks to Orpah and Ruth and says, "Listen, I have nothing for you. Go back home. You'll be safe and provided for." And Orpah leaves, but Ruth decides to stay. And she tells Naomi, basically, "Your God is my God. I'll go wherever you go." So we're going to keep reading Ruth 1:22. So they arrived in Bethlehem in late spring at the beginning of the barley harvest. So if you don't know, barley is a type of wheat that's made to make bread. So they go to Bethlehem to do that. So for me, I believe that this verse is the most important verse in the entire story. But we're actually going to come back to that, and I'm going to finish the story first. So to fill some gaps in, they go to Bethlehem, and Ruth becomes a worker in the barley field owned by a man named Boaz. He's kind to her. He lets her drink from the well. He tells the workers, the men and the women, to be nice to her, to respect her. And Naomi hears about this, and she's like, "Hey, you're a widow. You should try to marry this guy." So it actually ends up that Ruth and Boaz are very, very distant relatives, and they end up getting married. So that's where we're going to pick up the story at. So Ruth 14:13-16. So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. The Lord enabled Naomi to give birth to a son. The woman of the town said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord, who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age, for he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you." Naomi took the baby and cuddled him. She cared for him as if he were her own. The neighbor woman said, "Now at last Naomi has a son again," and they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. So now we're going to go back to Ruth 22. So it says, they arrived in Bethlehem in the late spring at the beginning of the barley harvest. This verse is so important because what it signifies is that God was at work the whole entire time. So, because when we go back to Ruth 1:20, Naomi's complaining. She's really sad, rightfully so. And she's like, call me Mara, for God has made my life so bitter. And now at Ruth 1:22, it talks about them going to the barley harvest. When Naomi was in her despair and sad and just rightfully so, God was working. God had a way for them, an ending for them. And God was working the whole entire time. You see, if it were not for the barley harvest, Ruth and Boaz would not have met. Not only would they have been able to have Obed, who would turn into David's grandfather, they also wouldn't have had protection or food. So not only did God have an ending for Naomi, he had an incredible ending. Of course, Ruth gets to marry Boaz, and that's wonderful. But their son is the grandfather of David. And that is the David who slay Goliath, who wrote the Psalms. His son ends up to be Solomon, who builds the tabernacle. The reason why I picked this story is this. Wherever you are, if you have unanswered prayers, unfulfilled desires, you feel like your needs are not being met, you have unhealed sicknesses, God sees that and he's working that out even when you can't see. God is preparing a way for you even when you can't see or feel it. He's working things out for you that have not happened yet. And when he has an ending for someone, it's an incredible ending. An ending better than you could ever even imagine. So we're going to go to Isaiah 65:24 because that reiterates this point. I will answer them before they even call to me. While they are still talking about their needs, I will go ahead and answer their prayers. So that says even when we start to pray and have a need or a want or a desire, God is already working on it and fighting for you to bring an ending better than you could ever hope for. I feel oftentimes when we can't see or feel God moving, we might say, well, God isn't working or God is taking too long. But the reality is that God is working even then when we can't feel it or see it. Now, I think one of the hardest things about overcoming the anxiety and fear during a rough time is that it's a never-ending battle. For me, when I was dealing with it, it felt like an ongoing battle constantly. It felt like I was on a merry-go-round and that I couldn't get off, that it was my mind was constantly flooded with those thoughts. And I think it's especially exacerbated when we go through hard times. When it's easier, when life is going well, it's a lot easier to remember God's promises. But in times of trouble, we often falter and we can go back to the anxiety and fear. So there was a group called the Israelites, and I feel like they struggled with something very similar. So going to Exodus 14:15-31, now to fill some gaps in this story, the Israelites were slaves for a very, very long time. They prayed that God would deliver him, and then he did. So at this point, Moses goes to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh finally says, okay, you can go, leave. But then he kind of changes his mind. So where they are, where we're picking up at, is they're at the Red Sea, and the Egyptians kind of surrounded them at this point. And they're worried on what they're going to do. So that's where we pick up at. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Pick up your staff and raise your hand over the sea. Divide the water so the Israelites can walk through the middle of the sea on dry ground. So the people of Israel walked through the middle of the sea on dry ground as the water stood up like a wall on both sides. That is how the Lord rescued Israel from the hand of the Egyptians that day. And the Israelites saw the bodies of the Egyptians washed up on the seashore. When the people of Israel saw the mighty power that the Lord had unleashed against the Egyptians, they were filled with awe before him. They put their faith in the Lord and in his servant Moses. So basically, God parts the sea and the water stands up and they're able to walk through. But of course, the Egyptians are not. So at this point, they're delivered out of Egypt and now they're on their way in the desert. So they're singing his praises and they're so grateful and excited for the things that God has done. But in the next few chapters, they start to complain. So Exodus 16:3. If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt, they said. There we sat around, pots filled with meat, and ate all the bread we wanted. But now you have brought us into the wilderness to starve us all to death. The people of Israel argued with Moses and tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord here with us or not? Then in Exodus 17:2, they say, give us water to drink, they demanded. Quiet, Moses replied. Why are you complaining against me? And why are you testing the Lord? So they said, why did you bring us out of Egypt? Are you trying to kill us, our children, and our livestock with thirst? So I want to remind us that they're complaining in chapters 16 and 17, and they were delivered in chapter 14 and singing God's praises in chapter 15. The Israelites allowed their thoughts and their fears to control them, rather than believing that God would deliver them just like he did with the Egyptians when he delivered them out of slavery. I think what they decided is they let their anxiety and their fear control them rather than saying, God delivered us out of Egypt from the Egyptians and he parted the Red Sea. And they could have used that to say, wow, God did that in the past. He's going to be faithful and provide for us in our future. For me, when I often face anxiety and fear, I always go back to the things that God has done in the past. So for me, it could be my parents or school or my friends, or it could be my pets. I love my pets. Things like that. They could have used what God's miracles in the past to help them believe that he would provide for them in the future. 2 Corinthians 5:7. For we live by believing and not by seeing. In times of grief, sadness, and unanswered prayers, we need to be believing in God's promises rather than giving into fear caused by the unknown. In those times, we must focus on what we know. So that could be times when God has come through in the past, whether that's being God answering that need, him fulfilling that desire, healing that sickness, those types of things, rather than what our fears or lies try to say. Even when life may not look or seem how you want, one of the best ways to get through is to believe in the truth that God has for you. That could be his plans for you are good, that he'll provide, that he cares for you, that he sees you, that he's at work in your life. One of the ways to overcome anxious thoughts, doubts, and fears is that whenever you have those thoughts, is to take them captive and speak truth over yourself. Cut off those thoughts right as they happen and speak truth instead. So fear doesn't have power unless you give it power. Now, how do we give fear power? Well, that's making agreements and believing those lies. So things like, oh, my life is never going to get better. God hasn't provided a job. He's not going to. Or God blesses all my friends, not me. Those types of things. When you let those thoughts mull in your mind and you think it over, you're giving it power. Don't do that. Cut them off right as they happen and speak truth. Don't even let them root, because that letting them sit there and thinking about it, that is where they get you, because it becomes a lot harder to fight those thoughts. 2 Corinthians 10:5. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Don't believe everything you think. Just because we have a thought doesn't make it true. Anxiety often makes you feel like your thoughts and your fears and the lies are reality, but that is not true. So, what is truth? So, truth could be things like, wow, God has an amazing and incredible, life-filling, joy-filling future for me. So, I want to talk about that for a second. This truth right here. God has an incredible future for me. Everyone say it.
God has an incredible future for me.
One of the things for me that when I was going through my struggle and I would share with people, they would always say, you know, what God has is best. That is so true. But what I want us to start believing and saying is God has an incredible future for me. God has an amazing future for me. I think the way people often look at God's plans in the church is often like, well, God's plan is best. And they act like it's like eating vegetables. But that's not true. God has an incredible future for you, an amazing future for you, a life-giving future for you. So I would challenge you to look at it that way instead of, oh, God's future is best. Do you get the difference? So another thing would be God will provide. Another one might be God cares about me. Or cares, sees, knows, whatever you want to put. Then we have the lies. So the lies might be whatever you have, whatever you think about. I don't know what they could be for you. They could be, God doesn't care about me. They could be, God doesn't love me. God doesn't have good plans for me. God will never bless me. My life will always be this way. I don't know what it is for you. There's tons of lies, but these are some of the truths that we can be speaking over ourselves. Because we have the power whether or not we want to believe a thought or not. So I would challenge you, right as you have those thoughts and right as those lies come into your mind, say, don't even entertain them and speak truth over yourself instead. You see, the Israelites allowed their thoughts of, well, God brought us out here to kill us. He brought us out here to starve us to death or thirst, whatever it was, to create anxiety and fear. And they believed that instead of the truth, which was God brought them out there to have freedom so they wouldn't have to be slaves anymore. So when we have those thoughts, we have a choice. Am I going to believe this or am I not going to believe it? And we have the choice to speak the truth over ourselves. Now, if you're struggling with believing the truth, if it's a thing of like, God, I want to believe these things. I want to believe that you will provide or that you care about me or that you do have an incredible future for me. I would tell God, for me, I just think about my own dad. Now, him and I are very close and I know that not everybody has that. But if you are struggling with believing God's truth, I would tell him, because with my own dad, in times where I've struggled about things and I've had issues and things like that, he's always been like, hey, we're going to work this out together. But the thing about God is he already knows what you think. He already knows your worries and your fears and your anxieties even before you think them. And God really wants to help you with that. You see, oftentimes I think when we give our struggles to people and we talk about it, sometimes they may point the finger accidentally or shame you, not on purpose. But God never wants to do that. I think God wants to say, hey, I love you. Let's work this out together. Out of love, if that makes any sense. He knows that you're struggling and he wants to help you. He's a loving father who wants to help his child. Now, I will say this does take practice. I think oftentimes when we hit bumps in the road, we often stop trying to fight those lies. But I would encourage you to keep going. You see, feelings follow actions. Actions do not follow feelings. So when you continuously speak truth of yourself and you don't believe the lies and you say, no, I'm not going to go there. I choose to cut it off and speak truth. You will slowly or fast, maybe, start to believe it. But when you allow your feelings to dictate your actions, well, I just don't feel like it, or I don't believe it today. Well, you're not going to get very far. For me, whenever I have anxious thoughts about the future, I don't even let those thoughts penetrate my mind. And I say, no, I choose to believe that my God has an incredible future for me. So then I start to list things. So for me, like I said, my family, or getting into school, or my friends, or my dog, or my trip to Israel, or my internship, things like that. Because I encourage you to keep going. Because if you don't feel like it, you're not going to, and you're not gonna get stuck out of the rut that you're in. For me, I was in that rut for a very long time, but it didn't really start to click until I continuously challenged those lies over and over again, and it just became an automatic thing. I would do it before I even had the thought. And that's what I would encourage you, is to start now. Start today. Because for me, it changed my life. And that's what I hope and pray for some of you today, if you're struggling with it, that it can change your life. Because if we don't start, we'll never get to that point. So we're going to end with this. So my favorite verse is Jeremiah 29:11, which you all know it, I think. So it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, for good and not disaster, to give you a future and a hope." So I want to give some background on this verse. I hear this verse in church all the time, but I think that background is extremely important, and it can help us today in our everyday life. Jeremiah wrote this, and he was a prophet, and he sent this to the Israelites at a time where one of their lowest points as a people. So the Babylonians kind of surrounded the Israelites. So they weren't able to get food in and out. They couldn't go in and out of the kingdom. So basically famine happened and there was cannibalism. There was flame throwing arrows that the Babylonians sent over. It was overall not a good time. So eventually the Babylonians broke through the kingdom and they took Israel captive. So they were forced to be exiled as slaves or servants, prisoners, whatever. They were taken away from their home. So they were exiled, and while they're being exiled, their king is being dragged along with them with no eyes and in handcuffs. So I don't know about you, but if I saw the leader of my country like that, that would definitely put some fear into me. I think, though, that the context is so important because God had Jeremiah write this to the Israelites in this particular time because that is when they needed it the most. They needed hope to cling to in their particular time because since it was such a terrible time, God was basically saying, even though you're not where you want to be, I still have a future for you. I think God wrote it in this time, not in a time of peace or of joy or anything like that, because he knew that that's when they needed it. And I think that's for us too. Even if your life may not look how you want right now, or you have unanswered prayers or unfulfilled desires, or there's things in your life that you wish would happen or wish didn't happen, turn to this and know that even though it's not where you want, that God does have a future for you and he does have hope for you. For me, this gives me great peace, knowing that I don't have to fear the future or figure things out or plan these things out, because I know that my God has an incredible future for me, so I don't have to fear. So I hope that you, as you go on your week, remember that God is working things out for you, even when you can't see, and that you take your thoughts captive and you challenge the lies and you don't let them penetrate your mind. So we're going to sing a song, but I want to pray first. So God, I just thank you for this day and for everyone who is able to make it.